AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products, with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM, serving Philadelphia and the entire tri-state area, as well as the world on the internet by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. I want to make mention that you can listen to rebroadcast 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, simply by logging on to the same place, AmericanWorkersRadio.com, and click on the Listen Anytime link. If you receive the announcement this morning on the email, well, send it out to a friend and invite them to tune in, and also let them know that they can hear a rebroadcast and tune in anytime they choose. I'm also inviting all of you to visit us on the internet and, of course, join our e-list. Our e-list has been getting a lot of clicks these days. It's right there on the right side on the top. You'll really be pleased with the information you receive, and you'll get a weekly update when the radio broadcast is going to be on. Well, I want to first thank our very popular panel members, Mark Andel, who is on a special assignment today. Mark is the founder of the Made in America store. I always ask that you support him. He is linked prominently on the front page. You can click on his picture or go right to his link, which is also on the front page. Then there is Larkin Connolly, the East Coast Vice President of SCORE. We hope to hear from Larkin today. Rich Logis is with us, Principal of RJL Technology Integration, and our very well-known and respected engineer is Henry Chaplinsky. I'm Michael Blihash, really, really pleased to present our broadcast to you each and every week. Now, I want to say, Rich, that as I go around, I have an opportunity to talk to a lot of people. A lot of the information that I put in my weekly commentaries, and may I take this minute to thank the radio broadcasters. We have about 20 of them now in different cities and states that play my broadcast, rebroadcast of the audio of the commentary. And there are some that read the commentary, make their own comments during the reading of the commentary. But we get some people from all over the country that tune in. I want to also mention that you can listen live anytime. You can hear all the broadcasts on our station simply by going to Listen Live Wednesday link. You can hear our Saturday broadcast. You can hear the Sunday broadcast. You can hear the daily broadcast, as well as several other broadcasts that are here on this station. So check it out and, of course, spread the word. Well, Rich, yesterday was a historic day in America. I really thought the speech by President Trump to the joint session of Congress was outstanding and provided us with a lot of positive information and a positive vision for America. I thought especially that it was good to hear President Trump focus on America, Americans, jobs, schools, roads, and all the issues that we need to restore America, our cities, our streets, and our schools need a lot of attention. And it can all be renewed if everybody works together and if we take action now. I really feel that there has been a new spirit in America. So I'm urging everybody who's listening to spread the word, make it a positive word. We hear enough negativity in our lives and in the news. Let's make things positive. Rich, how did you feel the speech went yesterday?
Good morning, Michael. Thank you, and to everybody. And Mark, well wishes for your travels, and hopefully Mark can call in today. Well, you know, Michael, a couple of thoughts. First off, I think that this speech just further reaffirmed why the election, not only for the presidency but across the country, I think it reaffirmed exactly why what happened happened. And I imagine that if the speech last night was given by President Clinton, undoubtedly the tone and a great deal of the policies and philosophies that are going to be put forth by the president and what we hope will be a Congress that will cooperate, although I don't have a problem with perhaps challenging the president on some things. We want to get the best legislation possible. I just imagine that if the talk had been given by President Clinton, we would have heard a lot of things that don't pertain to the entire country as a whole. And where I think the president is really getting things right at the moment is, you know, he ran a campaign talking about being a president for all of the people. And he said something very telling last night that I've been talking with some people about this morning. He had a line in the speech, if we go back and think about it, that his job was not to be the president of the world, but to be the president of America. And that is a total 180 from his predecessor, President Obama. And Hillary Clinton's position would have been as president to be a president of the world. And that's where I think right now the challenge for the Republican Party, Michael, I think the big challenge right now is if you think about the Republican Party as the beneficiary of, let's say, lotto winnings, you know, and you get all this, all these riches, what do you do with it? Do you save it? Do you invest it? Do you try to build equity on it? Or do you just waste it and do you just squander it? So I don't have a problem with a very ambitious agenda set forth by our current leader in the country, the president, and where I think he can have some outreach is there are 10 senators, Michael, 10 federal U.S. senators who next year are up for re-election who are in states that the president won. So I think he should not only work, of course, with his own party, but I say getting started today to outreach to some of those Democrats, because I think that those are Democrats who, if they understand what really happened in November, there can be some real common ground that they can meet to get some things done. Every president inherits some of the ills of the prior president. President Obama inherited things left over from President Bush from President Clinton, etc. So overall, Michael, my assessment of that speech last night is it showed us very clearly that the country, I do think, at this time made the right decision. And it does show also where I think the Democratic Party right now, where I think they're going so wrong, is I do not see a party that's jockeying to present a repackaged product to the American people. I don't see a party that's jockeying to win elections. I see a party that's jockeying simply to placate their base. And there is a question that I think the Democratic Party is going to have to really, eventually, I hope they're going to have to really look in the mirror and answer the question as to why Hillary Clinton, 8 years after the largest percentage turnout in the history of presidential politics here, why 8 years after that Hillary Clinton lost two-thirds of our states in the election. And that's a tough question. You know, that's a tough question for the party to answer. But eventually they're going to have to come to terms with that.
You know,
because what I do think, Michael, I just one other point on this. The other thing I want to say is I wonder if some of the very visible officials in the Democratic Party, I wonder if they thought that the enthusiasm from this election would sort of wear off. You know, maybe 3 months, 6 months down the line, people would just feel like, okay, you know, back to normal, we're not going to pay attention anymore. And what the Democrats are actually finding is the enthusiasm is actually getting stronger. And that should be worrisome for them. because a very charged up, aware electorate that wants to put America first, the Democrats are just, they're not in line with that, Michael. They're not. You know, no matter how off, no matter how much Keith Ellison or Tom Perez or Deborah Wasserman Schultz or Hillary Clinton, who's hanging around, if people have noticed, no matter how much they want to try to lecture us on that, the fact is they're not. They're not in tune with that.
Well, I see a new day in America. You know, Rich, after watching President Trump give his address to the joint session of Congress, I thought to myself, how much better life in America would have been if every president before him during the last 40 years would have focused on what he focused on yesterday, which was jobs, job skills in America, and the needs and concerns of the American people first. You know, I also wondered to myself as I was watching it, where have the elected members of the Congress, both from the House and the Senate, the Democrats and the Republicans in Washington, where have they been for 40 years?
Yeah,
as they've
question.
Been in, not ensuring that industries and jobs were growing in America as our population was growing. It doesn't make any sense to me. When I saw those people sitting as a group and standing as a group, I thought to myself, you should be thinking independently. And you're not. And it's that type of block hatred, that anger, is what made this country what it is today. Where are the jobs in the country? Why are 70,000 manufacturing facilities relocated from America overseas? Where were the leaders to speak up when those jobs were losing their grip in America and going overseas? Where were the elected officials to attack any sources that were dragging the companies out of America overseas? There's no leadership. We've talked about it a number of times where we ask, who is the person in the national elected office that we can direct our calls to say, what are you doing to help bring back jobs? There's nobody.
This is, Michael, this election will serve as a template, a blueprint for the American electorate going forward, because what essentially really happened in this election, and again, whether someone likes the president or voted for the president or not or supported him or not, if I put on my my political analyst cap here for a moment, like Larkin likes to say, what happened in this election is that we had a candidate who really looked very much like an independent third-party candidate. And granted that there are certain philosophies and beliefs that I think the president shares with the party as a whole, but there were quite a number of ideas, and now we're seeing philosophies put forth not only during the campaign but right now, that is going to really force the Republican Party to think about ultimately what the majority of voters in the country want. Do not let anyone tell you, Michael, popular vote, popular vote, popular vote. Hillary Clinton lost in this election 33 states. And she lost every single swing state: Florida, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Iowa, North Carolina, and Wisconsin. She won the popular vote because of the state of California. So when we're out in our day-to-day, Michael, and you mentioned about going out and about, the question to ask people to really gauge if they understand what happened, because I think you can't improve your product and offering unless you understand why it was rejected. When you go out and about and ask people and ask them and say, if you ask people, why is it that Hillary Clinton lost 33 states and you're not allowed to say popular vote, that's where you're going to differentiate with people who will understand what happened and those who just can't get away from the script. You know, they just can't get away from the DNC script of popular vote, popular vote, popular vote. Donald Trump won because we're a nation of white supremacists, KKK, Christian occultists who bring their bazookas to the local Aryan Nation book club reading of Mein Kampf. If you hear that, those are people we can't really, like, spend time with. Like, we can't try to convert the inconvertible. That's a word. So go out and talk to people out and about. And then when you meet some Democrats, Michael, who are out there, who right now maybe they're Reagan Democrats, maybe they're moderate, kind of down-the-middle Democrats, you know, ask them a question like, where are you going to go right now in your party? And you're going to hear some really fascinating answers. Now, I do understand also, Michael, to get back to your point, to hear these things that I'm saying this all sort of post-election. The broader issue that has happened is that the Washington political class, again, no matter how much Mitch McConnell and John Boehner and all those guys who's, granted, not in office anymore, but how, no matter how much they want it, and John McCain, no matter how much they want to sell us on it, the fact is that Washington entrenched class has been out of touch, not necessarily because they don't care about things, but they've spent way too much time spending too much time on all the wrong priorities. And then a candidate came along who said, no, we're going to talk about the American workers, the American labor force. We're going to talk about the citizens of the country first and foremost. America first does not mean America only. But again, I'm going to go back to what he said last night. His position is president of the United States, not the president of the world.
Very well said. I saw that. That was excellent.
That was so important. And you know, one other thing, Michael, because, again, the problems that we talk about on this show a lot, these flaws, these issues, a lot of them are bipartisan issues from the very deep state entrenched Washington political class. So we have to be honest about that. And, again, this is a big, big point. This is the biggest omission that the American mainstream media, which maybe I shouldn't use the word mainstream media anymore because the internet has changed media so much, and it's exactly why the media has to remain untouched. But if you really look at all media that's out there that has some visibility, 90% of it is Democrat-leaning. And the biggest omission that that media withheld from the electorate, although the electorate figured them out, but the biggest omission, Michael, was the fact that this election was a rebellion against the Democrats and the Republicans. And one other thing I just want to say, one of the things that I'm not happy about it because of how it got to this point, but today a lot of people around the country are talking about Ryan Owens' widow, Corinne Owens, who was there last night. And the fact of the matter is that whatever comes of all of these wars that we're involved in, I really hope that if anyone from President Trump's advisory committees or cabinet are listening to this show, I think one of the main areas where the president can really solidify a historic legacy is to finally get us the hell out of the Middle East, to get us out of there. Because those places over there, Michael, the reality of it is this. Those places cannot be saved. Their cultures are tens of thousands of years old. I am not, and please understand, I am not saying that Navy SEAL Owens died in vain. I do believe that our Defense Secretary, General Mattis, I do believe he's being truthful with the country in saying that intelligence was gathered. I do agree intelligence has to be over there. But I just, you know, the president talked a lot about the Iraq war. And we can look back on hindsight now and look at that war and say should have gone or should not have gone. There's a lot of revisionist history that the American left has put forth about that war with President Bush. So whatever our opinions might be today, I do hope that the president is really going to look at that region and start to, sooner rather than later, start to get us out of those areas. Because those are just areas that I just, despite the greatness of our military, and it's not their fault, I just don't think, Michael, we can salvage some of those places. You know, I just don't think that. I mean, the thing with the travel ban, for example, you know, the countries that were selected by President Obama because of concerns about vetting. And, yes, I agree the executive order was not rolled out very well. However, it's going to be rolled out again, and this time I'm going to trust his legal advisors that it's going to be overall it's going to be there's going to be more clarity. We're going to make clear that when we're talking about who we're bringing in, we're talking about those who are not on visa. They're just we're bringing them in as refugees or in some other capacity. And the fact of the matter is, Michael, that's actually like a that to me, that's a common sense thing. And it goes to show you how some fringe parts of the Democrats, and my fear about the Democratic Party is that their party as a whole is becoming fringe as opposed to just certain elements in it. I don't see how that's, I mean, that's a common sense thing to me. And a lot of the things that I'm hearing out of the president, especially in his speech last night, I think for the most part are pretty common sense, actually. And the fact that the Democrats will continue to character assassinate and impugn the integrity of those who supported him, including many people who voted for President Obama who wanted a change, I think it does tell a lot about that party. And, you know, some of those people yesterday were sitting during the ovation for Ryan Owens' widow, Corinne. And so I'm glad that, granted, not that someone died, but that there was a really emotional recognition of our military yesterday. And I was really was happy to see that. And amongst some other things, Michael. So, you know, I got a lot of thoughts here. Sorry, I don't mean to...
No, Rich, that's very good. I'm glad.
Rave on this here,
no, but I want to say this to you. What you're saying is... I agree. A president really leads the way, but it's up to the whole national elected officials that we put in Washington, 535 of them, pay them, give them all kind of benefits. And what have they really produced in the last 40 years? Our roads are in horrible shape. Our schools lost all of their training programs because of expense. Our drug situation has been out of control. That should have been stopped as soon as it began. There's so many things that, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, should have addressed it immediately. There's no dancing around. But Rich, one other thing. You were in the media for some time. My question is, where was the news media during the last 40 years as they saw industries and jobs exiting America? Where was it? When you were in the media, did the media heads say, hey, guys, I want to make sure that we focus on we're losing industries in America. That means we're going to lose people. We're going to lose money. Did anybody in the media give you instructions to try to focus on some of the business people and all that could help turn that around, Rich?
Well, remember, Michael, something again about And again, I'm going to correct myself when I say mainstream media, because again, the internet's opened up, thankfully, and it's why the internet must remain untouched. You're going to hear me say that about a trillion times for as long as I'm on this show, however many years, and hopefully, God willing, be many, many years. The major newspapers right now, Michael. I mean, we'll just talk about the New York Times and the Washington Post. Okay, I call those newspapers billionaire blogs. You know, Jeff Bezos is the CEO owner of the Washington Post. And I have a lot of respect for Jeff Bezos as a business person. You know, Amazon is like them or not, you have to give tons of business credit and respect to Amazon as a company because of what they've done in e-commerce, buying and selling on the internet. But Jeff Bezos, as a billionaire, when he bought the Washington Post, he knew it, that he was going to lose a ton of money, and he didn't care because he just wanted a billionaire blog. That's what it is. That's what the Washington Post is, New York Times. I laugh with these commercials they do about what is this thing they have now? The truth is hard to find, and I'm sitting here laughing, saying the truth is hard to find. This is a newspaper who had columnists and other reporters at their paper during the election, Michael, who said we're going to forego being objective. Excuse me, that's no different from the Onion comedy newspaper that we see. So with all due respect to the New York Times and the Washington Post, Michael, I don't need to I don't need to get all my news from the the billionaire blogs. These are guys with billions of dollars who vote Democrat, of course, and they just decide to have a major newspaper just so they can blog about whatever. You know, oh, Jeff Bezos, we lost $150 million this quarter on the Washington Post. I don't care. I'm worth $50 billion. I don't care if I lose $300 million. So the media is not overall serving the purpose of giving both sides of the story. And that's again, Michael, because of all the omissions and the withholds. When I've spoken to some of my friends, including some who are journalists in the last few months, there's a lot of fake outrage about what's going on now. And a lot of, we need to hold the government accountable and we need transparency. And I say, I agree. I 100% agree with you. But what I've asked those same people, Michael, and this again is a good question for I think a lot of Democrats in the country. The question is, where was that fervor and zeal to hold government accountable in the last 8 years? Like, I didn't hear. Go on your friends' Facebook posts. For all of our listeners, go on all your friends' social media posts who are very anti-Trump and find how many fervent opposing posts and accountability posts there were for President Obama. And you know what you're going to find? Basically zero. That's what you're going to find, Michael. So where was the fervor and the zeal and the outrage over the last 8 years? President Obama is one of the most opaque, non-transparent presidents in American history. There are numerous Freedom of Information lawsuits that exist. Of course, a lot of them are related to his partner in crime, Hillary Clinton, when she was Secretary of State. We can go find the stories, Michael, about records being pulled for Associated Press reporters. This notion that President Obama was not hostile to the media, again, that's la-la land. That's revisionist history. I don't have a problem with the media holding President Trump accountable when mistakes are made and errors are made and giving alternative viewpoints. But don't try to BS me. That's what I tell my friends who are Democrats. Don't BS me that the media was as outraged over 8 years of President Obama as they are right now of President Trump. Because when you say that, you sound like the corner loony who bangs the frying pan who says the end is near. That's how I interpret that. No, that's what I think. You know, like that. Like, I wish for the day, like when Isabella and Gabrielle are all older, we're walking down a street corner, you know, and there's a guy with a frying pan at the corner, you know, yelling like, "We love Democrat and Republican parties." I just want to say to Isabella and you to Gabriella, you know, like, oh, that, don't mind him. He's just a local kook, you know, who's yelling. I like the guy who does the end is near. Like, that's what I will hope will happen. Sort of with, you know, especially with the political parties. Not because I'm so much anti-party, but I listen to people now the way that they've revised history because they didn't get the outcome they wanted, and they just sound like a bunch of kooks to me.
Yep.
And I think it's hard to sit down with kooks and hammer out, you know, a good deal for regarding labor, regarding taxes, healthcare. That's another one, Michael. If, because we don't know yet, but if the Republican Party can achieve the things that we heard last night, costs going down, more competition, not trying to put companies out of business, but telling those companies you're going to need to compete now and you're going to need to sharpen the pencils a lot, and if you're not giving high-quality service, then guess what? The free market just got freer. And once the free market gets freer for competition, then all of the major insurers, again, I don't want to put anybody out of business, but if we can get all of these companies now to go and actually compete with one another, you're going to see healthcare costs almost immediately start to go down.
Yeah, I agree.
That issue right there, Michael, I don't doubt, and here's the thing, I don't doubt that we're going to have better enforcement and protection at the border. I don't doubt that we're going to have tax decreases. Now, a lot of the stuff the president talked about last night, Michael, we heard a lot of spending initiatives last night. You know, infrastructure, military. You know, the president wants to go spend some money. But when he ran, the question now is, okay, we want to increase costs in some things. We need to find ways to not just cut costs, but we got to get more people actually working, right? We have to go and get more people who are actually working, and preferably working in jobs that are that pay more than minimum wage. Because I know that President Obama, you know, the unemployment numbers. You know, we talked about those numbers a lot, and you know, jobs came in. Yeah, some jobs did come in, Michael. You know, jobs did come in, but it's the other, you know, the problem is the other side of that coin is, as much as we had some jobs come in, when you grow the government more than every other president combined, and we've had some big spenders, and George W. Bush was a big spending president also, Michael, so even if you give President Obama a couple years of margin of error, which I do think a president deserves that, okay, I do, although President Trump's margin of error, fair or unfair to him, is slimmer. Even if you give him a few years' benefit of the doubt, President Obama grew the government, federal government, more than every president combined. So what was really the net gain of those jobs when you just bring on an avalanche more of debt? So the president wants to spend. I heard a lot of spending last night. I did hear that. Now the challenge is going to be, how do we get to pay for that?
Well, Rich, I heard that spending too. But as I listened to the spending, I thought to myself, well, there are a lot of areas in government I can suggest we can slash spending. And some of them are in the salaries being paid to people in these various departments, really, that they don't know anything, that I have to argue about every little thing with these people. They just go on and on about what they know, which is virtually nothing as far as I'm concerned. From what I saw in that speech, what I saw since the inauguration, and what I saw even during the campaign, there's been too much focus on partisan politics. When they walked into the chamber yesterday, I would have hoped that every elected member, the whole 535 of them, would have walked in there with their own thinking. Not we're going in as a clique of this or a clique of that, but I'm going in to hear what he has to say. I will cheer for what I like and not cheer for what I don't like, instead of entering like sheep ready to go to slaughter. I don't care for that kind of stuff. The focus on partisan politics has to stop. There's too many distractions now in the news media. Looking back, I don't see where the news media brought up a lot of this about jobs and industries leaving America. Very, very little of it. And as a result of them paying attention, worrying about movie stars and everything else that's not important to the day-to-day person who has to go to work and pay their bills, we now find ourselves 94 million people not in the workforce in America, and only 152 million people are in the workforce right now. That should be near 200 million. And that's really very difficult to understand. And America finds itself in $20 trillion in debt. And by the way, they're talking about how good the Affordable Care Act was and how it brought in all the people. When I look in on the debt clock, which is presented by the Census Bureau, the United States Census Bureau, it lists right now that there are 31 million Americans with no health care at all. After 7 years of this Affordable Care Act, why did it drop from 48 million to 31? Where's the rest of the 31 million people going to rest their hats?
Well, I was very, again, Michael, heartened and encouraged that one thing that I give a lot of credit to the president for is that during his campaign and now as president, he has remained very consistent. And one of the things that he did say in one of the debates, you know, at one of the 97 debates that the Republicans had, is he said, you know, here in the United States, as a Republican, it's unacceptable for people to die in our streets because they cannot get medical care. And he reiterated the point last night that even with pre-existing conditions and health problems, those people have to have coverage. You know, that's a belief that I think really a majority of Americans do agree with. And that is, it is unacceptable for us to have people who cannot get care and coverage. Now, again, like everything, we have to find ways of paying for that. We have to not penalize people who, whether it's just sheer old good luck or they're just healthy people and they take care of themselves, whatever the case is, like being a good driver, that we have people who are whose premiums are not artificially higher than they need to be. And as part of the repeal and replace, the thing that the Congress is going to have to really do is they have to make sure that those who are going to buy health care as an insurance policy, and this is going to be a daunting task, Michael, but they need to simplify that process. I mean, when you buy any other insurance, you are buying only what it is that you need. And what happened with the Affordable Care Act, you know, and I try to look at this on both sides here, you know, the president came into that legislation. He wanted people to have health insurance who otherwise couldn't have had it. I think to some extent there was the heart was in the right place. And I've argued on this show before about something like a single-payer or Medicare. And I still think a private health insurance with a Medicare/single-payer, I still think that could work with the right people running it. Ironically, I think President Trump is someone who actually could make that happen, but he's not of that belief. And having said that, it would be a very hard thing, I think, to sell to the American public right now for a Medicare for all, although I still think that some hybrid of it could work. But having said that, opening up all the states to make sure that we get health care out of this state-by-state monopoly, that's going to, in some places, Michael, it's going to dramatically decrease health insurance costs.
Absolutely. I can't agree more.
It's going to, in some places, will dramatically reduce it. I mean, right down here in Florida, we have, I think it's two health insurance companies on the exchange. So when you talk with a lot of people who you're going to find this, you know, the so-called success stories with Obamacare, but you're going to find many, many more people who purchased the Affordable Care Act marketplaces insurances because they just had no other choice, Michael. You know, like I had to get it with my wife because I wasn't going to spend what I was spending for COBRA from my wife's health insurance plan. And as a credit to my wife's employer, we had the finest health insurance plan I'd ever seen. But the problem with having COBRA, which means that you keep, it's the law that you keep your insurance after you leave a job. I mean, it was the cost of a mortgage monthly. So I looked at that and thought, you know, who really the hell can pay for that? So we went on to the marketplace because essentially we didn't have any really good choices. So we have to get health care. We've got to make the free market for health care freer. And the way you'll do that is by getting companies that are in Florida to go and compete with you guys in Pennsylvania and vice versa.
Right.
Anywhere across the country.
Right.
So companies in New York and like Mark. Again, I always joke with Mark Anno. I asked Mark on the show, Mark, what the hell do you know about health insurance? Right. And I don't know anything. Right. No one does.
Rich, the sad part of it is, when Dr. Walter Sue was on with us about 2 years ago, in fact, I have to contact him, see if he'll be able to join us in the future. One of the things that we talked about was a side-by-side comparison. In other words, we're looking at the Affordable Care Act prices now. How about we put side-by-side the new proposed rates that Trump and the House and the Senate is proposing right now, that the American people can understand. It's not like it was when the Affordable Care Act first came about, where they passed it and never read it. We have time now to read this, to put this into action. One of the things that they do in Pennsylvania for the senior programs is that all the Medicare people and the senior programs through the PACE operation, they negotiate with the state to be reimbursed for senior costs. Why can't we do that on a national level? Why does it only happen in the state of Pennsylvania? Now, why I'm saying that is, everybody, is that a cost of a pill in Pennsylvania could be 30 cents. If you're not on the PACE program, a senior and on PACE program, that pill could be $1.75. Well, how did Pace negotiate that down to 30 cents a pill, and yet the general public has to pay $1.75. There's got to be a meeting of minds. Somebody like Trump has to bring these people in and ask them for the best price possible. No more dancing around. As I watched the president speak yesterday, I thought, well, America is really the major force in the world. But our leadership has really not been focused on the most important issue that made us a rich nation, and that is industries and jobs for America's working age and able-bodied people. They didn't think of that for 40 years. Some people told me, I was at an event in Conshohocken on Sunday, and some people told me, you know, we worked for this company and that company. No one ever cared that they were leaving America. No local elected official, no national official, no one even contacted them to see how they could stay in Conshohocken. That's very unfortunate. And that's the way things have been going in America. That's why I asked you earlier about the people in the media. Do you ever remember your editor coming over to you and say, Rich, I want to assign you on a job about, let's get our industries back up in New York or whatever. Did you ever get that from your editor? No, I don't think so. It was always looking for division, dirt, whatever, to make somebody read the paper and spread bad news. Where's the good news that we need to hear as Americans? It certainly is when you sit back and look, our elected officials sucked the nipple dry. For 40 years, they did very little or nothing, or we would not be in the situation we are today. As I look at the debt clock this second, $19,980 billion in debt. Every citizen owes $61,000. How's that even possible? When it was $2,000 or $3,000, the elected officials should have blew their tops. But no, they don't care because they're fed in those cafeterias. They have relaxation centers. They have chauffeurs. Their apartments are paid for. Their carcasses are well paid to do very little, travel around, first class on airplanes and stuff. When does this end? When does this end? Recently, I checked on a payroll system, and I looked at some of the salaries that the people were being paid. It is a disgrace. You know, those dollars come from the people who are working, from the people, the pensioners. They're coming from taxes. All these dollars are paying these people to keep people in poverty. I'm in social services, human services. I know what goes on. They're not interested in helping people go up the ladder because that then decreases their jobs. I can't find reports that say, well, poverty was this in a particular city in, say, the year 2005. Here we are, 2017. Look how much less poverty is these days. It's not there to be found. And that's where the national elected officials better start looking about themselves to see what have they done. A lot of those people that are in those places, they're really not qualified to be there. They don't want to go out to the people. They don't want to have town halls. They don't want to go into the gut of the neighborhoods to see what's going on. We have to start looking and electing people who are really willing to go into the neighborhoods and take a quick look and take a long look at what's happening. They would never want this to continue in America.
Well, you know, a couple things, Michael. You know, right there, what you just said, that's a that right there is the challenge to issue to our two major parties. And that challenge is for those major parties to start to think in less traditional ways. And what I mean by less traditional ways is to, you know, they just, the parties, let's just be honest about this, for the most part, they would always just put forth like the same kinds of candidates. And then we just get into this lesser of two evils cycle. You know, I mean, virtually every Mitt Romney voter I know personally, they didn't have a problem with him personally, but how many enthusiastic Mitt Romney voters did you know, Michael? Probably none. I mean, really, let's be honest about this, right? Virtually none.
None.
So such a small. But why did the Republican voters? Why were they so? What made them excited this time around? And what made them excited about this time around is that there was someone who, despite his flaws, despite his imperfections, had an actual campaign message that was less rooted in lesser of two evils and more rooted in America First. And this is a challenge to the parties. Now, the Democratic Party, they're hurting now. And it's only their own fault. I mean, don't get me wrong. They're not victims here. They're really hurting right now. The question for the Republican Party is, are those guys going to be the Atlanta Falcons? Are they going to have the biggest lead ever and still lose the game? Because there's a difference in sports between playing not to lose and playing to win. You look at traditional Republican candidates, Michael, down the line, and I'm not saying all of them, but for the most part, these were candidates who played not to lose. Very safe. Nothing really compelling about them. Nothing inspiring. I was asked down here, hey, why does Deborah Wasserman Schultz keep getting reelected as a congresswoman? And I don't know the guy who, you know, the Republicans here ran the same guy twice back-to-back against Wasserman Schultz. I don't know him. Seems like a very nice guy. But what I said to the Florida GOP when I met them is I said, he doesn't inspire anyone. He just brings the base out. And if we're going to start thinking about politics in this new era, we have to start, it's sort of a race to see who accepts this quicker, Republican or Democrat, and I suspect that right now the Republicans are ahead in the game here, is that there's this question of, if we're in a new era of politics, are we going to just run these sort of very blah ad candidates who just get the base out, or are we going to go and cast the net wide? And are we going to have a party that makes it very clear that we don't care what your skin color is, we don't care what your gender is, we do not care what your religion is or is not. The Republican Party, the challenge before them is to make the term Republican synonymous with American.
Right.
If they can do that, then they're going to be sitting in a very strong position. But ultimately, I will give the benefit of the doubt and the trust in the voters that even if the party's improving its brand and giving better candidates as a whole, that's no reason to give them carte blanche. See, that's the big difference. That was really one of the big differences amongst many with the Trump-Clinton election. What the Democrats did with Clinton is they just simply kept her out of sight, out of mind, tried to run the clock out, all of their media, which is 90% of the media we see. They weren't talking about whether she'd get elected. They were talking about how big the landslide would be. Well, guess what, Michael? Everybody else had a different plan.
I agree. And, Rich, I have to tell you this. And every circle that I go, every gathering I go, people tell me, point blank, I voted for Trump for a few reasons. Number one is that I thought that he would be the only person that could be ruthless in getting all parties to work together. He could be the only person who could put the finger on elected officials, businesses, workers, and the media, because he's the only one that understood that only together is it possible to make some kind of change in America happen. That is why people tell me they voted for him. And they said they already knew that it was going to be a public relations thing with him from the time he entered the race 18 months ago. That's what they wanted. They didn't care about the campaign stuff and the problems and this and that. They wanted change, and they focused on him. Working age and able-bodied Americans want to have jobs, not be directed to all kind of welfare type programs. Guys, I got to take this 2 minutes to say thank you to our very, very special sponsors. I'd like to mention today a thank you to Mike Sessions from Go For Made in America. Now, you can see his site listed on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com. I want to tell you something. Good things are happening in the future. Mike Sessions and Henry Chaplinsky are looking and they're finalizing the American Workers Radio app. It's going to be wonderful. Henry showed it to me. Mike Sessions, thank you so much for what you're doing. We're really going to do something special. We're going to send that around and grow our audience. And I'd like to also say that we started through this broadcast National Small Business Weekend, which is the first Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of every month. I'm urging all of you to go out this weekend, support your local businesses, and when you do, make sure you let them know about National Small Business Weekend and let them know they can check out the internet site, nationalsmallbusinessweekend.com, where they can even print out a poster and put it on their cash register or window to invite people to come in. It's time for us to unite. And helping us to unite people, I'd like to acknowledge some of our sponsors. Leon Mankowski, attorney at law. Mr. Chester Kshanovsky. Serena's Auto Body Shop and Collision Center. The Polish Roman Catholic Union of America, Mr. Joseph Drobot, president. Michael Steinman, attorney at law. Dr. Eva Maciak, a great dentist in Philadelphia. Dominic Rostotsky, attorney at law. Polka Deli, located in Port Richmond, Philadelphia, and the Polish American Travel Service, 2714 East Allegheny Avenue. And also Mr. Martin Bednarek, Washington Savings Bank, and Yolanda Konopatska de Scipio, attorney at law. And also, I'd like to mention a special thank you to the Polish and Slavic Federal Credit Union. As you know, they are a bank that has area locations, but now with so many people doing business on the internet, you can now bank online with them. Simply check them out by going to psfcu.com. That's psfcu.com. And our friends and supporters from the Sugar House Casino, located at 1001 North Delaware Avenue, invite you to stop by. They're open 24 hours a day. You can visit them anytime on the internet to see their schedule of entertainment by going to sugarhousecasino.com. And also special greetings from Pennsylvania Senator John Sabatina and Lieutenant Governor Mike Stack, as well as State Representative John Taylor and Representative Gene DiGirolamo of Pennsylvania. May I also encourage you to support Mark Andel, founder of the Made in America store. If you're looking for 100% American made, there is no better place for you to support than the Made in America store. Check them out at madeinamericastore.com. Also, when you go on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com, you'll see Mike Sessions and Go for USA. Check out his link. And also, I talked to Jude Watkins, and Jude has his AmeriLoop project up and running, and he asks that you check it out. It's on the front page of American Workers Radio on the right-hand side under the Million American Jobs Project. And support the American-made label. You know, Rich, today is Ash Wednesday, and many people give up doing things during this time of year. Well, I'm giving up buying anything that doesn't have an American-made label. And I have to tell you, too, guys, please support your local businesses because it's all American-made, whether it's the hoagie shop, the pizza shop, and all of these kielbasa makers. Go out and support your local businesses. Many of them are doing their best to get those American-made products in their stores. As I mentioned during last week's show, the merchandisers have been controlling America for a long, long time. I hope and I pray that our president and all of our Democrats and Republicans in Washington will do something to talk to those merchandisers to make sure the merchandisers include all of the American-made products that they can find from their individual states. When I look around at the merchandiser lists, well, I ask to see the lists themselves. I say, well, it would be nice if I could see a little American flag by that product or made in USA or whatever, so that you, the buyer in the store, would know that the product's made in America. But those merchandisers won't do it, because the bottom line is this. The merchandiser likes making 50 cents on a dollar from foreign made rather than 30 cents on a dollar from American made. Thank you. And please do go out and support National Small Business Weekend and spread the word about our broadcast. Remember, you can listen anytime. Listen, you'll be very interested to hear Rich's comments. Make sure you spread the email that is coming out later this afternoon. Spread it around to family members and friends. That's how our list of people continues to grow. As I said earlier, you can also listen live simply by going to the front page of American Workers Radio. It is connected to the station during its broadcast times. Well, Rich, I'm allowing you the last 2 minutes of the broadcast.
Well, I hope I didn't put our listeners to sleep with all my rambling.
No, you didn't, Rich. I mean, I get a lot of compliments about you wherever I go.
Well, my... tell me, I want to start hearing about the insults I get, Michael. Those really excite me.
Well, it's not too many insults. They just always tell me I would never want to come up against Rich Loges, because he sounds like a man who is reading and really somebody that I would not want to have a bad encounter with.
Well, as the great Socrates, Socrates from Plato's Republic once said, I'm the smartest man in Athens because I know that I know nothing.
Well, I'm happy to see that people are really discussing the American-made issue a lot. It's all over now. People are showing me their ties and telling me they're supporting local stores. This is what it's all about. We got to take this welfare mentality out of America and get back to a business mentality where our people work, they earn, they save, and they feel good about themselves.
For Michael, just the last point here for everyone to be continued on this. Get involved, get active, you know, study our history. I still believe I'm cautiously pessimistic as always. I'm a hopeless optimist. I fully concur with what the president said last night. The best days of America are truly ahead of us.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, until this Saturday at 11, right here on 860, or from the front page of American Workers Radio, or next Wednesday at 11, I wish you and yours the very best. Look for the American-made label and speak up everywhere you shop. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks, everyone.